The hearing will please come to order. Yesterday, the committee commenced its inquiry into the Houston plan, our witness being Mr. Houston. And it developed in the testimony that several illegal proposals had been made to the president, in this case Mr. Nixon, that he had approved those proposals, later had revoked his approval, but that the very activities for which his authority was sought had in fact been going on for a long period of time prior to the submission of the proposals to the president. The evidence also showed that once the president had revoked the proposals, about 5 days after he had first approved them, the activities nevertheless continued and in some cases were expanded. Mr. Houston testified that Mr. Nixon was not aware of these activities either before or after his approval and revocation. One of the illegal activities was the opening of the mail by the CIA. And this committee will look into that mail opening program extensively. It's a very serious matter. And we have hearings scheduled a few weeks from now, and into which we will inquire in detail about the mail opening program. We want to know, for example, why the mail of such individuals and organizations in this country as the Ford Foundation, Harvard University, the Rockefeller Foundation was regularly opened by the CIA, or the mail coming to or from such individuals as Arthur Burns, Bella Abzug, Jay Rockefeller, Martin Luther King, Mrs. Martin Luther King, Richard Nixon himself, as well as such senators as Hubert Humphrey, Edward Kennedy, even the chairman of this committee, whose letter to my mother is in the file, should have been regularly opened and scrutinized by the CIA against the laws of the country. And so today, our objective is not to look at this mail program in great detail, for we will do that later. But it is rather to examine the lack of accountability within the agency and the failure to keep the President of the United States properly advised of such activities. a core issue if we are going to reform the intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies of the federal government and make them properly responsible to and accountable for their actions to the elected representatives of the people, chief among whom, of course, is the president himself. Now, with that brief introduction to the general topic for the day, I would like to ask our witness, Mr. Angleton, who I understand is represented by counsel, to take the oath. Before I ask you to take the oath, Mr. Angleton, I wonder if your attorney would identify himself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is John T. Brown, counsel for Mr. Angleton in these proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Angleton, will you please stand and take the oath? Do you solemnly swear that all the testimony you will give in this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Mr. Schwartz, will you please begin the questioning?
Mr. Angleton, were you employed by the CIA in 1970?
Yes, I was.
Can you keep your voice up? It's hard to hear you.
Yes, I was.
What was your job at that time?
I was the chief of the counterintelligence staff.
And when did you start working for the CIA?
I began in 1947, having come from OSS.
You knew, Mr. Angleton, did you not, that the CIA was opening mail in New York City in 1970 and had been doing so for approximately 15 or 20 years?
Pardon me, if I may interrupt for just a moment. As I indicated to counsel for the committee, Mr. Angleton had a very brief opening statement which he wished to make, and I would like at this time to ask for the opportunity to have him make that statement, if I may.
Yes, I'm sorry. You didn't say that to me, and I'm very sorry.
I beg your pardon.
Go ahead, Mr. Angleton.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is James Angleton. I'm appearing before the committee today freely and without subpoena. I'm mindful of the serious issues facing the committee, and I know of your concern that they be resolved prudently and expeditiously. I have served in the intelligence community of the United States for 31 years, beginning with the OSS during World War II. In 1954, I became chief of the counterintelligence activities of CIA, a position which I held until 1974. I am now retired. My years of service have convinced me that the strength of the United States lies in its capacity to sustain perpetual yet peaceful revolution. It is the ultimate function of the intelligence community as part of our government to maintain and enhance the opportunity for peaceful change. I believe most strongly that the efforts and motivations of the intelligence community have contributed to the sustaining of a nation of diversity and strength. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Angleton.
Mr. Angleton, if we could just get back to where we were. You just said, did you not, that you knew in 1970 and had known for a substantial period of time that the CIA was opening mail in New York City?
That is correct.
And Director Helms knew that, did he not?
That is correct.
And J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI, knew that, did he not?
I would assume so, sir.
Well, I'll read to you what Mr. Helms said in his deposition of last week. Quotes, Mr. Hoover knew all about the mail operations, close quotes. Now, you've no reason to doubt that, do you?
I do not.
And Mr. Sullivan of the FBI knew all about the CIA's mail opening program, did he not?
That is correct.
Now, Mr. Helms and Mr. Hoover and Mr. Sullivan and yourself were all involved in the process which has come to be known as the Houston Plan. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Mr. Helms and Mr. Hoover signed the plan, did they not?
They did.
And Mr. Sullivan was the primary drafter, but you and other working persons contributed to the drafting of the report, did you not?
Correct.
Right. Would you turn, Mr. Angleton, to page 29 of the Special Report Interagency Committee on Intelligence Ad Hoc, June 1970. Now, that's talking about mail coverage, isn't it?
That is correct.
And it distinguishes between routine coverage and covert coverage, saying routine coverage is legal and covert coverage is illegal. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And by covert coverage, they meant opening the mail, did they not?
Exactly.
Would you read into the record the first sentence under the heading Nature of Restrictions, please?
Covert coverage has been discontinued while routine coverage has been reduced primarily as an outgrowth of publicity arising from disclosure of routine mail coverage during legal proceedings and publicity afforded this matter in congressional hearings involving accusations of governmental invasion of privacy.
Now, the first five words say covert coverage has been discontinued, and as you just agreed a moment ago, that states that the opening of mail has been discontinued. Isn't that right?
May I seek a little clarification, please? I believe that if you read the contribution under preliminary discussion, that it's dealing, that we're faced with two problems. We're faced with the problem of domestic mail that goes from one point in the United States to another point in the United States. The CIA activity, was devoted from mail from the United States to communist countries and from communist countries to the United States. So there's two degrees of opening. In other words, the entire intent and motivation of the program is conducted by CIA involved the question of foreign entanglements. Counterintelligence objectives. The domestic mail program was a program that had been conducted at some time or another by the FBI.
Mr. Angleton, would you answer my question? The words covert coverage has been discontinued. Covert there means opening mail, isn't that right?
That is correct.
Okay, and I will read to you from the prior paragraph a reference which makes perfectly clear that the committee was talking about both foreign and domestic mail, the sentence which says the following. Covert mail coverage, also known as sophisticated mail coverage or flaps and seals, entails surreptitious screening and may include opening and examination of domestic or foreign mail. Now, the sentence which says covert coverage has been discontinued, that's a lie, that's false, as far as your knowledge, Mr. Hoover's knowledge, Mr. Helms' knowledge, and Mr. Sullivan's knowledge. Isn't that correct?
Excuse me, I'm trying to read your preceding paragraph.
It's page 29, Senator, of R tab A1.
It is still my impression, Mr. Schwartz, that this activity that is referred to as having been discontinued refers to the Bureau's activities in this field.
Well, the words don't say that, number one. Number two, how would a reader of these words have any idea that that distinction was being drawn, Mr. Angleton?
Well, it's my impression that this was the gap which the Bureau was seeking to cure.
All right, but let's make perfectly clear what we're talking about. You knew, Mr. Helms knew, Mr. Hoover knew and Mr. Sullivan knew that the CIA was in fact opening the mail.
I agree.
And the sentence says covert coverage, which means mail opening, has been discontinued.
But I still say that the FBI, in my view, are the ones who made the contribution of that statement. It was covering the problems that they had had in discontinuing the their mail coverage.
Mr. Helms signed the report, didn't he?
That is correct.
All right, I just want to have you read into the record from two more documents which relate to the Attorney General of the United States being informed about mail opening, but being informed in June 1971, or in other words, a year after the Houston plan. Would you first read into the record from the Brown Book, tab J, paragraph 4 of that document. And while you're looking for it, I will identify for the record that that is a CIA memorandum for the record dated May 19, 1971, subject DCI's meeting concerning HT Lingual, which was the code name for the mail opening program. And it refers, Mr. Angleton, to a meeting in Mr. Helms's office which involved a number of CIA officials, including yourself. Would you read into the record paragraph 4, please? It's the first page, Senator, of tab J in the Brown Book. Read it to yourself.
May I read it to myself first, please? Paragraph 4, the DCI, meaning the Director of Central Intelligence, then asked who in the Post Office Department knows the full extent of the operation beyond cover surveillance. The Chief Counterintelligence, meaning myself, replied that only Mr. Cotter knows, for he has been witting while with the CIA and the Office of Security. The previous chief postal inspector, Mr. Montague, had never wanted to know the extent of examination actually done, and thus was able to deny on oath before a congressional committee that there was any tampering. Mr. Cotter would be unable to make such a denial under oath. In exchange between the Director of Central Intelligence and the Director of Plans, Deputy Director for Plans, it was observed that while Mr. Cotter's loyalty to CIA could be assumed, his dilemma is that he owes loyalty now to the Postmaster General.
Right. Now, because of that dilemma, in other words, for the first time, someone was in the Post Office Department that for sure knew that the mail was being opened. Because of that dilemma, Mr. Helms went to see the Attorney General, did he not?
That's correct.
All right, would you now read into the record from the memorandum for the record, 3 June 1971, which, Senator, is at tab K. Subject meeting at DCI's office concerning HT Lingual, dated, as I said, June 3rd, 1971. Would you read into the record the second paragraph, which refers to Mr. Helms' statement that he had briefed the Attorney General concerning the mail opening program?
Paragraph 2. Mr. Helms stated that on Monday he had briefed the Attorney General Mitchell on the operation. Parenthesis note, Mr. Helms may have meant Tuesday, 1 June, Monday, having been a holiday. Mr. Helms indicated that Mr. Mitchell fully concurred in the value of the operation and had no, quote, hang-ups concerning it. When discussing the advisability of also briefing Postmaster General Blunt, Mr. Mitchell encouraged Mr. Helms to undertake such a briefing.
Right. Now, that document was dated June 3rd, 1971, and the mail opening program lasted until January or February 1973, when, at the instance of Mr. Colby, who said it was illegal, it was dropped. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was actually, the director was Mr. Schlesinger.
And was it not Mr. Colby who was the moving force saying it was illegal?
Precisely.
Okay, no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Didn't the CIA have an affirmative duty to inform the president about such a program?
I believe so, without any question.
But it apparently was not done. You did not inform the president. Director Helms did not inform the president. So,
I would say, sir, not by way of any excuse, but those are very turbulent periods for the intelligence community, and particularly for the FBI. And I think that all of us had enormous respect for Mr. Hoover and understood the problems which he had in sustaining the reputation of the FBI.
But the fact that the times were turbulent, the fact that illegal operations were being conducted by the very agencies we entrust to uphold and enforce the law, makes it all the more incumbent that the president be informed of what's going on, doesn't it? It's really not an excuse.
I don't think there was ever the forum in which these matters could be raised at that level. I think it's been one of the troubles on domestic counterintelligence and foreign counterintelligence, that the issues never do get beyond the parochial circle of those engaged in that activity.
But you have said that there was an affirmative duty on the CIA to inform the president.
I don't dispute that.
And he was not informed.
But I
so that was a failure. That was a failure of duty
Mr.
to the commander-in-chief. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think anyone would have hesitated to inform the president if he at any moment asked for a review of intelligence operations.
Well, that's what he did do. That's the very thing he asked Houston to do. That's the very reason that these agencies got together to make recommendations to him. And when they made their recommendations, they misrepresented the facts.
I was referring, sir, to a much more restricted forum.
I'm referring to the mail. And what I have said is solidly based upon the evidence. The president wanted to be informed. He wanted recommendations. He wanted to decide what should be done, and he was misinformed. Not only was he misinformed, but when he reconsidered authorizing the opening of the mail 5 days later and revoked it, the CIA didn't pay the slightest bit of attention to him, did it? The commander-in-chief, as you say.
I have no answer to that. I say I have no satisfactory answer to...
You have no satisfactory answer?
No, I do not.
Well, I don't think there is a satisfactory answer, because having revoked the authority, the CIA went right ahead with the program. So the commander-in-chief isn't the commander-in-chief at all. He's just a problem. You don't want to inform him in the first place, because he might say no. That's the truth of it. And when he did say no, you disregard it. And then you call him the commander-in-chief. I have no further questions.
What was your understanding of the legality of the covert mail operation?
That it was illegal.
What?
That it was illegal.
That it was illegal. Now, you're an attorney.
No, I'm not, sir.
Well, maybe that might be an asset.
It's my cover.
Being one myself, I shouldn't say that.
It's my cover.
How do you rationalize conducting a program which you believe to be illegal?
To begin with, I was taking it over as an ongoing operation. And there was a probability that the program, through lack of personnel and funding, would have been scrubbed at some stage. From the counterintelligence point of view, we believe that it was extremely important to know everything possible regarding contacts of American citizens with communist countries. And second, that we believe that the security of the operation was such that the Soviets were unaware of such a program, and therefore that many of the interests that the Soviets would have in the United States, subversive and otherwise, would be through the open mails, when their own adjudication was that the mails were could not be violated.
So that a judgment was made, with which you concurred, that although covert mail openings were illegal, the good that flowed from it in terms of anticipating threats to this country through the use of this counterintelligence technique made it worthwhile nevertheless.
That is correct.
How do you recommend that this committee deal with this profound crisis between political and legal responsibility in government, a nation that believes in the laws, and what you regard to be the counterintelligence imperative of illegal activity? What do we do about it?
Certain individual rights have to be sacrificed for the national security.
Do you believe that national security cannot be protected and except through the sacrifice of these rights?
I believe that all matters dealing with counterespionage require very sophisticated handling and require considerable latitude.